Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the podcast you know and love that talks about toys, movies, cartoons, whatever you're into, we are too. Joining me every single week, every week for more than 2 years now, 2 years, they said it wouldn't last.
I'm surprised, Mitch, I'm surprised I last, or I'm surprised I didn't kill you when you're still here.
I know, I'm on borrowed time every time we talk. Ladies and gentlemen, John Cimino.
And a big shout out to, today is the birthday of Mr. The King, Jack Kirby, my fellow Virgo.
Oh my God. Hola. How old, Jack would have been 101 years old today.
Yeah, the man, the myth, the legend.
The man that inspired so many young people to get into comic books.
Yeah, and here's a question. All the creators today, who wasn't inspired by him? I mean, obviously Stan's got a big claim to that too, but Jesus, Kirby? My gosh.
It's over. It's over. You can't go better than Jack Kirby. Though not a particular favorite of mine. I don't want to get into it. I mean, I used to see his art as a child. You don't understand, in the 70s, that's when Kirby was coming back to Marvel, and there'd be all these headlines, "The King is back," and I'd get these books, and I'd open it up, and it would be like the Captain America Mad Bomb stuff or the 2001 adaptations, and I would just stare at it and go, "Eh."
It's funny, because that's when he was on his way out, obviously.
Yeah, I know that, but yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, people look at it today, and do you have, let me ask you this, I always loved it. I know, because you got to remember, you're a lot younger than you, so when I got into it, it was like, it was awesome, and then his older stuff was even better, so I never had that feeling it wasn't good. But, here's a question for you, Mitchie.
What?
Did you think that, I mean, so you had a bad taste for Kirby and all that stuff.
Right.
But did you have a particular favorite issue of Kirby that, like, you liked, though? Like, one that kind of stood out to you?
You mean...
Were you just appalled by it when you got into it?
I could not stand that Captain America run, the Mad Bomb stuff. A couple years later, when he went over to Pacific Comics... And they started up with Captain Victory. I was okay with that. I read some of that. And then it got into something called Silver Star. And then I just gave up. It was just all over the place. But it wasn't that bad. It wasn't okay. But I was never a fan of, what is it, Cap Mundi or?
Commandy.
Commandy, that's it, yes. That's a big Matt Herring favorite over there.
Yeah, Matt was very obscure with all his loves.
But no, I think they were giving Kirby the crap books over at Marvel. I mean, 2001, Devil Dinosaur, they were not good. They were not good
books.
I'll
tell you this. I was collecting comics at this time, and I saw this, and I said, Kirby's done. Do you remember when he did Topps Comics, when he did, like, Bombast? It was that guy throwing the bomb.
No. What was it? What the hell? What is this?
There were six characters that he did, and he did the covers for them. I remember looking at them, and this is, like, I'm really young. this is like, I think in the 90s, Mitch. Yeah. I think like he came back and he did the covers. But I remember looking at them and I'm like, this is horrible. I was like, this is the stupidest thing ever. Like, you know, this guy throwing this bomb.
No, is this for Marvel? What are these books?
Tops Comics. Remember Tops the Cards when Tops Comics came out? And I remember, I just remember seeing that. And I was like, oh, God. That's when I looked at Kirby and I thought that he was done. Shame on me. But yeah, look that up, Mitch, if you get a chance.
See, I remember Tops comic books, but they were in the 90s.
Yeah. He did the covers for these characters. I guess they were like old, obscure Kirby characters that they finally came out of the, you know, out of his, you know, out of his archives, and he did these characters.
Yeah, because Tops Comics, the only thing they had that was a hit at Tops Comics was the X-Files. I remember that being a big
Mitch,
book.
You're saying Tops wasn't the Tops? Oh!
Oh, no, it was not. Tops comic books was obscure, and again, X-Files. Everybody had to get X-Files, and then that show was just like, you know, flash to the pan.
I was never into that, never.
No. But you know, we were talking, you recently just teased a lot of people with your Saturday Morning Collectibles latest edition. And even I saw it and wanted it. It was a Captain America-related item. It was an item from the 80s. It was a toy. It was the Team America, Captain America stunt cycle. Is that what it's called?
No, stunt chopper.
Chopper. Now, I don't remember seeing this. I saw that photo you put up, and what it looked like to me was like the old, was it Revel or Revel?
No. Ideal.
The ideal.
The Team America goes back to.
Well, no. We got to tell people what we're talking about when we just say. Okay. Well, was Ideal? It was the little bendable figure that they used to have of Evel Knievel, who was a 70s icon as a stuntman, Daredevil. He would actually go on ABC's Wide World of Sports. And on, he would jump buses, motorcycles.
Huge in the 70s.
Huge. It was crazy. I mean, it was at a time where I remember as a kid, we would go over to a friend's house and we'd all run around and watch the TV because Evel Knievel was about to do something. And it was like...
He was like a real-life superhero.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was jumping the Grand Canyon, the Snake River Canyon, whatever the hell it was. That was on... Everybody talked about that. That I mean, the guy was the ultimate publicity machine, marketer. I mean, he had his own toy line out there. He had.
When I first discovered him, my mom had a picnic blanket when I was a little kid, a huge picnic blanket, and it was this, I thought he was a superhero. It was a drawing of Evel Knievel, you know, it was his face, but then they showed him on his motorcycle with those stars and all that. Yeah. I thought he was a superhero because I didn't even know who the guy was.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about it. I mean, he's just a guy who would do these crazy stunts. And like you said, everybody, the merchandise was nuts. I mean, I remember people had Evel Knievel lunch boxes.
Yeah, did he break, I think he did, didn't he break every single bone
in his body? Life? Yeah, at least a couple times, you know?
The guy was in, and he always lived.
It wouldn't be much of a story if he died. He was up there at the time. In the 70s, I guess we were hard up for entertainment. We didn't have cable or Netflix. But there was a lot of people out there who were doing stuff like he was. There was the Walenda family, the high wire people that would go across, like, you know, Niagara Falls or whatever, and then, you know, that type of stuff. There was also a guy, now that I think about it, called the Human Fly, who was in a red outfit. And I remember him being like strapped to the top of a jumbo jet, and he went up once, and he came up, and then he like climbed a building at one point. There was a Marvel comic book based on this guy too, the Human Fly. I remember getting a couple issues of that in the 70s. It was a weird.
Oh, was that based on him? Like that?
Yes, that was the was a real guy.
Who was that? Ross Andrews? There was some.
Yes. But I do.
Invaders and stuff. But he's been around for. Yeah. Okay.
I got to go look up what happened to the Human Fly because he was also a guy that you'd see on TV once in a while, and they made a comic book out of him. A lot of obscure people, but the Evel Knievel thing is the only one that took off, if I remember, because there were some other toys out there. I'm going to throw toys out there. You're not going to even know because you weren't even around. One was called J.J. Arms. It was a real life detective, a police officer who had lost both of his hands in the line of duty. I don't remember the story, but he had hooks before they had these really elaborate prosthetics. He had these hooks that were on his hands, and they made a toy based on that.
And
it was kind of creepy because I had the toy. But you would open up this little briefcase he came with, and he had like little different hands, and he'd hold a gun or something like that. But Jesus, though, that was a scary one. Then they had some other weird toys. Hugo, do you remember Hugo? Did you ever see that? It was a little hand puppet, bald head hand puppet that you.
That was a creepy little.
Yeah, you could put different.
H-U-G-O, Hugo, right?
Hugo, yeah, and you could put on beards and wigs and stuff, and. Yeah, it was just a strange little toy.
Was that a real person?
No, I don't think Hugo was a real thing. Really obscure toys that I had as a kid. But anyway, going back to the Evel Knievel. Now, this is in the early 70s. I'm thinking 74, 75. You would put the motorcycle in this.
Okay, they called it the gyrocycle. What it was, a motorcycle that had an Evel Knievel figure on it, and you put it in this, they called it an energizer,
yep.
And you revved it up, you would crank it, and it would go zzz, 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 and when you got it at a certain speed, the bike would just shoot out, and it would it was actually really fun. It could go uphill, and it could go downhill, and the fun of it was it could crash, and you can make obstacles for it, but the figure would kind of stay on or flip up, but it would always, stay on. But they were, and they also made the vans. So Ideal made that in probably 1975, and they made a few things. They also made his car. It was all Evel Knievel.
Yeah.
But last time I saw it, actually, throw this out to you, Mitchie, Kenny Lawrence had it. He was trying to panhandle it off to me for a crazy price, and I was like, it ain't worth that much. But what happened was, during the late 70s, Evel Knievel beat the crap out of his wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he had some domestic issues, so Ideal pulled him. And that kind of, that toy, though it was a big seller, it kind of just went out. But what happened in the 80s was, at this time, Marvel was doing a lot of licensing with toys. This is where G.I. Joe came out of, and also Team America came out of. But what they did with Team America is they first appeared in a Captain America issue. So while this was going on, I'm sure you can look it up, Mitch. I don't remember the exact.
Now, Team America, not the puppet movie that came out a couple years ago. This was a bunch of motorcycle guys.
What Ideal was doing now to probably restart this toy line was they did something with Marvel. I'm sure we can get the answers from Jim Shooter because he was the editor-in-chief at that time. But like I said, they were doing some deals with toys. You know, obviously G.I. Joe spawned from this. But what happened was they made the characters. There was these three characters. I think one was called Red Poncho, something like that. But there was three. There was a blue, white, and, a red guy. And then there were all these, they were called the Team America, and they first appeared in the Captain America issues, and then they went off into their limited series. I think it went to 12 issues. And so what happened was there was also another character called the Marauder. He actually appeared in a Thing issue, and he appeared, you know, when the Thing had his solo issues going appeared in that, and that was always the one to get. Okay, so when I was a kid, you only saw to get the Dream was to get the Black Marauder, because he had the chopper, and he was a little more expensive. But my brother got the blue guy, and I got the red guy. But lo and behold, 10 years later, now I knew they were in that Captain America, but 10 years after this was all done, I looked online, and I saw freaking Captain America Team America toy. And I was like, did they make a Captain America chopper? And for some reason, for some reason, that I don't know when it came out, but it was very small distribution on this Captain America toy. Case in point, you didn't even know about it. And on eBay, I only saw it once in 10 freaking years, and I never seen it again. So I happened to find it again a few months ago, and I talked to the guy, and I found one still sealed. And lo and behold, when I put it up, when you saw it on my Saturday Morning Collectibles homepage, I got a lot of responses. And a guy came in on Sunday who was a big Team America fan and a historian. I don't know. This guy was kind of a weirdo, but he did know his Team America stuff. Also had the pages. And he had a Captain America stunt cycle, but he didn't have it sealed. But what he did have, he said, when he bought a box from the Ideal Company, it comes with a shield. And he said, I had, for some reason, at the bottom of this box was 25 of those Captain America shields. So that tells me that they had bigger plans for this Captain America thing, but this line got cut off before they could produce more of those Captain Americas, because why would they have all those shields? And it had all the other guys. So it's a big mystery why this Captain America stunt cycle, which is an incredible toy, because let's be honest, if I saw this back then when I was a kid, that was the toy you wanted. Who gives a crap about the other guys in the Black Murata? And it comes with the free Team America number one comic inside there. So it is a big mystery of why this Captain America toy is so rare, and it came out in 1982,
yes,
and then it just didn't get produced. But it was just an incredible toy. And one more thing, to know that in the 80s, in those 80s, remember, superheroes kind of were not in vogue anymore, from like until the Secret Wars and the superpowers came back in 84 and 85. So from like 1981 to 1984, superhero toys were kind of not around anymore. So that explains why they killed that. But I would love to know by Jim Shooter the inside story, the mystery of this Captain America toy, because even that guy didn't know the real story either. So it was very interesting.
Well, I was just looking on the internet as you were speaking, and it turns out to be Team America was renamed the Thunder Riders.
Yes.
And Thing 27. The original story was written by famed comic book writer and often terrific on guests, J.M. DeMatteis.
Oh, it was DeMatteis that did. Okay. Yes. You got to remember, Mitch, nobody wanted to write those toy lines. I know Larry Hama didn't want it. He was the last person they picked, and I'm sure DeMatteis didn't want to write
it. Well, it says right here, Captain America writer J.M. DeMatteis described Team America as, quote, another one we kind of got forced into doing. It said the month following their May 1982 preview appearance in Captain America, the team's monthly self-titled series launch, it was canceled with Team America issue 12 in May of 1983. So there it is. It doesn't say who the artist was on that, though. But
some people threw out, is it Herb Trimpe? I remember some. I think that was you who asked me, because he was kind of thrown on those titles because he was doing Godzilla.
Oh, and actually, Jim Salicrup plays a part in this.
Does he really? What did he do?
It says he was the one behind the. Wasn't Jim Shooter. I'm reading it right now because there's a link here. Reference Jim Shooter. All right, I'll have to look into this further.
We were just sitting with Jim Salicrup. I was just with him at Terrific Con.
I know. Jim Salicrup popped in for a day. But
the inventor of the Thanos copter.
The inventor of the Thanos copter. There's a longer article here about how he was involved. He was the editor.
Okay.
And he's the one that put it on. But again, all working under Shooter's.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Shooter made the deal. I would love to know.
Or was it Stan making the deals?
No. Shooter was already. No, Stan was in Hollywood now. Stan was in Duke trying to get the.
Goodness gracious. Do you know who did the cover?
Of which one?
Team America. Ready? Frank Miller and Bob Layton.
Wow,
that's a big team here. It says the origin, the script was written, the first script that was in the toy one. I don't know. It says was written by Jim Shooter. And then it was handed off to... I don't know why J.M. DeMatteis is mentioned in here, because I'm looking at the...
Was he writing Captain America? Because they first appeared in Captain America, correct?
Yeah. No. Yeah, you're right. That was the Captain America. This is actually the story itself. The series was written by this guy. Al Milgram did the stuff.
Yeah, Al Milgram always thrown on there.
Bill Mantlo. Wow, every issue seems to have another writer, because it's like... I'm reading the first issue, Shooter and Ed Hannigan. Ed Hannigan of Cloak and Dagger fame. Issue two has Mike Vosburgh and Al Milgram, and then it's written by Jim Shooter and Denny O'Neill and Bill Mantlo.
Wow.
And then the next month, it's just Bill Mantlo and Luke McDonald is doing the art. And then the next month, it changes again. It looks like poor Bill Mint. Oh, my God. Alan Cooperberg comes in on issue five, Paul's late brother, who I was just with yesterday. And now I own the Captain America shield that once was owned by
John Byrne.
John Byrne is now in my possession. It is now in my house. That thing weighs a ton, by the way. It's the old school Captain America shield, but
it was the one that was made from the metal, right?
Yeah, it is very heavy.
They made the Captain America shield, and they made the Thor hammer, which I had.
Did they really make a Thor hammer?
Yeah. They made the Thor hammer first. Yeah.
Yeah, the name of the company is called like White Glass or something like that.
I remember it came out in like the early 2000s or the late 90s.
Yeah.
Then
I'm finishing up Team America here. It keeps going. It keeps bouncing around. Vinny Coletta takes over doing the stuff. Alan Cooperberg looks like he's stuck. Then Tom DeFalco steps in and does a script. This thing is like...
it looks like Jim Shooter is going down the hallway.
It's like, exactly. It's like the bastard stepchild.
Too easy to get.
And then birthday boy yesterday, Mr. Don Perlin, who just turned 89, who's, I think, the co-creator of Moon Knight, he takes over on issue 12, appropriately titled The End of Team America. No, I'm sorry, Don Perlin. I'm sorry, he did the artwork on it. What am I saying? Okay. Yeah. Wow.
But once again, I'm sure they really pushed for this.
Obviously. Oh, yeah, because after this, they then again appeared in New Mutants issues 5 and 6.
Yes, that's
God,
correct.
God, they could not get rid of this thing.
And the guy who came to my shop, who is a big Team America expert, he asked a couple of pages. He goes, I have a couple of original pages of those Team America. And I said in my head, why the hell would you want those? You know,
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody wants Team America. Now, it reminds me of those other crappy books that came out that I call crappy books, but I would buy, because at the time you would just buy any comic. But I remember... Shogun Warriors was another comic that came out that was based on a toy line.
I told you, the late 70s, Stan Lee was making deals with it. That was Stan Lee.
Was it Matsui? Matsui toy?
Yeah. Marvel got the Shogun Warriors while they got Spider-Man, and they did that live-action Spider-Man series that was in, has a big cult following, and did better than they did in the American Spider-Man live-action stuff. That thing was a disaster.
I've seen videos of that Spider-Man one. It's a lot of stunts in that one. Spider-Man's fighting... Dragons
he has the robot and all those.
It looks like one of those Mighty Morphin Power Ranger shows.
Correct. And then we got Godzilla. That's why Marvel produced Godzilla at that time. That was another.
Now I like that book. That one there had art by Herb Trimpe, Dum Dum Dugan, and Gabe Jones from S.H.I.E.L.D. were flying around the world all the time trying to get track down Godzilla. He actually was shrunken down by Henry Pym in issue 12, I believe, and he fought a rat.
Yeah, and you got to remember, there was also that Godzilla cartoon that was out at that time.
Oh, yeah, when he had little Godzuki and stuff like that.
Yeah, Godzilla and Godzuki.
Yeah, I loved Godzuki. He was cool.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm staring at Savannah Guthrie. Savannah Guthrie, you.
Take it easy,
man. Today Show Temptress.
Ooh. All right,
love
but
that
the,
woman.
Yeah, so the Team America is a mystery, and that is a question to ask Jim Shooter.
We should have, because last week at the long-gone Terrific Con, it's only been a week and I'm having withdrawals still, we had a special panel devoted to toy comics, and it was with Larry Hama from the G.I. Joe series, Mike Golden from the Micronauts, and Paul Cooperberg from not only the He-Man comics, but Superpowers comics.
Yep.
See, now I'm wondering now, on the toy shelves as we speak, I don't think there are any toy-based comics out there that I see now and then. Was IDW tries to bring back like the Micronauts and ROM and some other, but and Transformers, that's still around. But the thing of it is, kids don't play with toys like they used to. So who are they making these books for? They don't bank them for kids that don't play with toys, and let alone those kids don't go to comic book shops. So it's really, really bizarre. Maybe there should be a nostalgia team that comes out there and brings back Team America. Let's start the campaign. Right?
Yeah, I know. So,
no? Nobody needs to see Team America again?
Well, you know, that it's funny, but like I said, it's a total mystery, and I'm very curious. But
the
like
whole idea of a bunch of guys on motorbikes isn't really, like, you know, making me want to go out there. Who are they going to fight? Galactus or something?
I don't know. Why did the Murata have a thing with the Thing? Like, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting, too.
The Thing was like the everyman in the 80s. They threw him in a lot of weird stuff. Remember?
At that time, they had the Secret Wars, and then remember he stayed off in that world?
Yeah, because he got his face carved up by Wolverine, and he didn't heal, and he wore a mask.
That came later. But at that time during the 80s, they had, like I said, they had him... In that Secret Wars, he stayed on that battle.
A battle war. But it's almost like they didn't know what to do with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they got away from what made the Fantastic Four whole. And has it ever recovered?
You know, no, because isn't that when like the She-Hulk joined the team? Why the Thing was gone?
Yeah, Byrne. That because Byrne loved her, so he had her join the team.
You know which book I liked when the Fantastic Four broke up for like the third time was in the 70s, is when the Thing lost the ability to turn into the Thing. He was permanently Ben Grimm, and he wore an exoskeleton.
Oh, yeah,
remember that? And it would come on and off. I love that.
That was in the late 70s. Didn't Luke Cage even take his place?
Luke Cage joined the team. Thundra popped up in there. Then she was a bad guy. I believe my friend... Keith Pollard was doing those books, or George Perez, Ron Wilson. There was a stable of guys that would pop up and do those books. That's when the Thing, they thought he died. Remember that? He was flying an experimental space shuttle, and it crashed, and it was El Diablo, who was the bad guy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was a good storyline. I liked El Diablo, even though he just seemed like he was an alchemist. Ooh, yeah. He could turn things into metal and gold and lead, and I'm like, okay, that's your bad guy? Whatever. But Byrne did something with El Diablo. I remember he was on a cover. He looked good. He's basically a magician, you know?
Kirby and Lee, they can't all be winners, you know? The Orisa.
Oh, they're no Matador. Did you ever see the Matador?
What about Pacepot Pete?
Pacepot Pete became the Trapster, okay?
It still didn't win.
We were talking about that on the panel last week with the old Marvel and bringing back some of the old characters. And they're going to bring back What If, the long lamented series. What If is returning this October.
By Roy Thomas.
Yeah, but they're going to bring back some other great ones. They're brand new stories. What If Spider-Man became the Punisher?
Wow.
You know, the ideas, the concepts are a little weird, but, you know, it's nice to see that. Oh, Savannah Guthrie, you long-legged woman.
Take it easy.
All right. So, and then what else is going on?
No, but there? What If, just really quickly, What If was kind of like Roy's bringing, like, the multiverse to the Marvel Universe. You got to remember that. There was nothing like that before. Remember that?
No. Roy created that because he didn't like the imaginary stories done by DC.
Yeah, correct. But you know how like DC has like those multiverses? It's almost like What If became like the multiverse because some of that stuff, didn't it become reality and then like, you know, different alternate, you know, dimensions and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's
way in continuity.
Too complicated.
Yeah, way too complicated.
I mean, you know, now and then they have to boil these stories down and, you know, fix them because they're all over the place. Like they're going to do with Captain Marvel.
because quick question, because you were reading comics the other day.
I've been on a comic reading frenzy the last 3 days.
Is continuity not even an issue?
Nowadays, no, it doesn't exist anymore. They're all
happens.
They're just little. Case in point, I picked up the DC's relaunch of Superman, and it was done by Brian Michael Bendis, and it was called The Man of Steel. It was a 6-issue series that kind of tried to get all the current Superman storylines. One storyline, Jor-El came back. Then he had a son named Joe. Joseph Kent, and he was married to Lois Lane, and Bendis tried to grab all these different Superman's threads and condense them and boil them down into one new Superman story universe so he could tell his Superman stories. So he had to get rid of all this supplerative whatever, all this extraneous storylines, and it took 6 issues for him to wrangle it. I read them all. My head was hurting by the end of that 6th issue last night. You know what they did? Jor-El, who somehow is alive from a recent storyline, came back and took Lois and Superman's son in a spaceship to travel the universe to teach young Superman's son, whatever, Joe Kent, whatever his name is, to teach him about the universe, because eventually he's going to grow up to be the new Superman. So it was just a way to write off the character. It's like, oh, they went on a little vacation. And then the current Superman is now upset because he's got no Lois Lane, no girlfriend.
Oh, so Lois Lane's not there.
She's not there. And then he's trying to find them because someone destroyed the Fortress of Solitude. So he lost the communication device, so he has no idea where they are. So they're lost in space.
No communication device.
No communication device. So he's going there, and he's trying to beat up this bad guy who turned out to be this alien who destroyed Krypton.
Oh, another guy in that plot.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of like Doomsday, but he's a smart alien guy, and he hated the Kryptonians, and he wiped out the planet and thus created Superman. And it's like, whoa, what are you doing here? Make mine Marvel. That's what I got to say when I was done reading that.
Okay. That's tough. Now, tell me how the new Fantastic Four issue was.
Now, I liked it because it was teased for a long time, and the Human Torch and the Thing have their own Marvel 2-in-1, and they were teaming up. And Johnny Storm did not want to believe that Reed and Sue and the kids were dead because they left to go save the universe from some cataclysmic event. What is it, 5 years ago or more? So that's when the Fantastic Four comic ended. And the Thing kept saying, no, they're dead, they're dead, they're dead. And Johnny didn't want to believe it. So the entire Marvel 2-in-1 run was them trying to find traces of them again. So they find someone fires off the famed Fantastic Four flare, you know, where it writes the letters in the sky from the issue, the first issue. How it writes the letters, we never understood that, but you don't ask. So
Mr. Fantastic made it. That's good enough.
So the Thing is proposing to Alicia Masters. They're going to get married finally, which I thought they did at one point. Because I'm reading, going, didn't they get married once before?
Go ahead.
Johnny comes there, and he's like, oh, you're crazy. Thing says, could you be my best man? He goes, no, Reed should be your best man. He goes, Johnny, Reed's dead. He's not dead. How could you say that? They're coming back. And meanwhile, it's always very dramatic. It's a soap opera. It's exactly a soap opera now that I think about it. So Reed, you know, Johnny's upset with the Thing. The Thing is trying to go on with his life. And then out of nowhere, you see somewhere in the distant corners of the universe or the galaxy, wherever the hell they are, Reed Richards is there with Sue, and they're sending up a signal. They're trying to get back, and they have to let everybody know that they need help. So somehow he sends a signal across space, and it's not just the words Fantastic Four. It makes a giant four projected in space, right in front of the Earth, so the entire Earth looks up and sees a giant four in the skies, and they know they're alive again, and then that's how the issue ends. And at the same time, in Latveria, a certain doctor is getting a new mask again, and it's you see his face is all scarred up. Of course, we just see glimpses of it, and then he gets news that once again the Fantastic Four are coming back, and he's okay, not so, too happy. And that's okay, how it ends.
Okay, that's cool. I like.
It was a good story. I don't know why Scott.
But here's a question: Where has Dr. Doom been all this time?
I don't know. Maybe he's been there.
And this is coming from a guy that has been collecting forever.
I don't know. Dr. Doom's been around. It's hard to keep track. He was a good guy for a while. He was wearing white armor. It's too much. But it's not as confusing. Hold on. It's not as confusing as a certain Miss Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Ms. Marvel, a.k.a. Binary, a.k.a. Warbird, a.k.a. Captain Marvel. Jesus Lord, son. Created by Roy Thomas and Gene Colan.
Yeah.
Will that story ever be boiled down and to turn into a coherent storyline?
Well, I honestly think that aren't they kind of like totally forgetting the past? They just kind of get her as the fighter pilot working for the Kree and all that stuff, and then she just jumps into Captain Marvel.
I think so, because as we all know, the character debuted in Marvel Super Heroes. Issue 13.
Correct.
And she was just working on a military base, and I believe she was a secretary? I think she was a secretary. She meets Dr. Walter Lawson, who was also a.k.a. Captain Marvel. He was the guy that wore the white suit.
Marvel.
What Roy said was the worst color combination ever, with the green Saturn on his chest.
And she gets
caught in an explosion. Trying to save, or she was next to Captain Marvel, and he saves her life by giving some of his powers or something to her.
Mitch, let me say something for a second. That has to be the worst job. Now, what I mean by job, like a guy, like the worst fate for a premier hero. Okay, they pushed Captain Marvel to be the star of the book. And then just you have this background character, Carol Danvers, that, uh-huh. And all of a sudden, you fast forward, 40 years? 50 years. The guy, Captain Marvel, is a loser.
Oh, he's gone.
That little background character is the biggest star of the,
I know. It's amazing. Well, look what they did the Guardians of the Galaxy. One of the worst teams ever.
Ever.
And they're huge hits, but we all know the original Marvel Guardians, they sucked. And then their subsequent books, they sucked. They always sucked.
Right, but that actually happened in the movies. This was in the comic books. Like Marvel, he had a good run there, and they were just like...
Well, Jim Starlin talked about it, and if you missed the panel at Terrificon, you're a loser. You should go listen to one of the greatest panels ever. We got to find out how Jim got the character, what happened to it, why it was canceled, and look at where it's come now. So watch
the silver hair to blonde hair.
Yes, because blonde hair sold more books.
Yeah,
I loved. I would love the conversations they had about what worked and what didn't work. But anyway, I remember I was talking about Ms. Marvel number one. That was done by Jerry Conway.
Oh, yeah, Conway. He was usually the guy.
Yeah, he did Ms. Marvel, and that was in 77. And then I remember reading her in the Uncanny X-Men, and she becomes Binary with the, flame bird type of thing. She had fire.
Right.
And then she becomes Warbird, which was by Kurt Busiek, your McDonald flipping burger buddy. Kurt Busiek.
Yeah, that's true.
And then George Perez. I don't even know what the frig Binary Warbird is. I don't know what the hell it is.
Right, but then Ms. Marvel came back and Carol Dan. And didn't Rogue take her powers?
Yes, for a little while? Yeah. She absorbed her powers, and then that's how Rogue got super strong, and she puts Carol Danvers in a coma.
Right, poor Carol. I mean,
and then there's that other Captain Marvel, the black woman that was in the Avengers. The hell?
She came in the '80s, right?
Yeah, with the white outfit. I don't even know what was her. What happened to that one?
She was an Avenger.
Avengers 200, I believe. Right?
Yeah, she kind of came and went.
I don't know what happened to that one. Yeah. Where is that one in this whole story?
It's funny you're saying that to me, because a kid came to my booth this past Sunday and he said, I have the limited series of the Captain Marvel. And I go, oh, which one? And he goes, it's the black girl and she's in the silver costume and stuff. And I go, he goes, how much is that worth? Yeah, we're talking about $20. That's not the right character. He thought it was.
Like, no. And then, of course, yeah. Jerry Ordway was at Terrific Con and somebody gave him a blank cover that said Captain Marvel on it. And he drew, who did he draw? But Shazam. So there's a lot of confusion. At least he didn't draw the Captain Marvel that came apart in pieces.
Oh, the split?
The split thing, that the Dell Comics guy. Oi.
What was Roy's joke? Unfortunately, he came back together.
Yeah. I saw that once in a long bin. I go, what the hell's this Captain Marvel now? Everybody, yeah. I think I had it. I think I was Captain Marvel at one point. I don't even know anymore. It's getting out of control.
Now she's who she is, Carol Danvers. So it's funny. They call her Captain Marvel, like the title, obviously. Yeah, but in the comics and all that, it's strictly Carol Danvers. She's always called Carol. You know, I never really. It's like her rank. But
well, like they don't call Captain Marvel Shazam in DC, but in the book, I believe they call him Captain Marvel, but they don't call him on the title that.
Well, that was for legal reasons, though, Mitchie.
Yeah, it's just confusing. It's a Team America. I blame Team America.
Yeah. Ideal, yeah.
What happened to the Ideal? They're gone, too?
Yeah, I think Ideal is longer. They made some great stuff, though, you know?
Did they make a lot of Hulk toys, too?
Oh, yeah, because they had in a lot of Batman toys in the 60s and stuff.
Did they make the Rage Cage?
Nope, that was fun stuff. They made the Hulk and Spider-Man. They made these games, the smash up action game and the Spider-Man. That
what was the one where you put the plastic muscles under your sleeve and you pumped it up?
Yeah, that's Remco. That's the Hulk instant muscles. Mitch, you could use those. Some of
I could. I wish I had those right now when I was dealing with Lou Ferrigno last week. Lou Ferrigno. My phone. Every time my phone goes off now in a message, I still have flashbacks that it's Ferrigno. Ferrigno flashbacks.
I know. I got a lot of those texts. You're like, you won't leave me alone.
You wouldn't believe what he wants now.
I spent
more time with Lou Ferrigno than any other guest I had at that show. We drove around for hours in the back of a limousine.
The thing is, you would have been honored, but you wanted out of it.
I know, because I missed everybody. I'm going through my books now, seeing what got autographed. I realized Captain America 703 that just came out, there's five or six pages in there drawn by Alan Davis and inked by Mark Farmer. I'm like, they were just at my show. Why didn't I get this book signed by them? And then there was Frank Cho did the Captain Marvel relaunch a couple years ago. He was at the show. He did the cover. Yeah. Why didn't I get him to sign that? I don't know. I was too busy running the world's greatest comic convention to sit there and get pictures and autographs from everybody.
I'm gonna leave this here because I told you this yesterday, but I'll do this to our millions of fans. Millions and millions. It has to do with Captain Marvel. I made a $100 bet yesterday with Roy. I can't tell you exactly what it is, but I will eventually reveal it on the Power Cosmic Podcast before everything takes place. But I made a $100 bet with Roy, and I'm going to take his money, and he said he's going to take mine. There's going to be no honor, none of that stuff, no honor. It has something big to do with Captain Marvel, and I will reveal it when the time is right.
All right, well, we will sit there and wait for that. Okay, there, faithful listeners, I'm going away. I'm driving back to Mohegan Sun to start talking about Terrific Con 2019, my fifth year at the Mohegan Sun next year. Oh, my God, 50 weeks away, and we're already working on this thing again. I gotta get a help.
Don't forget about CT Gamer.
Oh yeah, that one too. And then everyone's begging me. I got more phone calls yesterday to do an anime convention, which I gotta be honest, I don't know anything about anime. I'm not a fan of it, but people want me to put the magic that I have behind Terrific Con and Gamer Con and put it towards an anime con. So all I know about anime went out the door with Speed Racer back in the 70s. I don't know anything about it. I tried watching that Akira movie years ago. Remember that was the big thing? Oh, I couldn't. I had to turn it off. I felt violently ill.
Yeah, yeah.
It was bad. It was
bad. Think I liked, the Force 5 stuff.
Oh, Battle of the Planets?
No. Yeah, I liked that. You got to remember, I was a kid at that time. You're a lot older.
I never liked that. Right. I liked the one with the Yamamoto. I thought that was a good one.
And I liked Ninja Scroll. I didn't mind that anime. But other than that, 99.9% of it all, I wasn't into either.
All right. Let me get going because I'm watching the Today Show and Savannah Guthrie in this black dress is just driving me up a wall today.
Oh, my God. Take it easy, Mitch.
So, well, if Dylan Dreyer was on with her.
Team America, Captain America, all that good stuff.
Unbelievable. Go buy some toys and read some comics. That's it. What do we say, Johnny?
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.